Accession number 31299, reel 1.
Yeah.
Okay. Peter Birch, reel 1. If we could start with when and where you were born.
When I was born in Eton College on the 12th of July, 1915.
In the college itself?
Yes, because my father, he was the coachman to the only college master that had actually had a horse and carriage. And Brinton, the name was Brinton, and they are my godparents, actually, Mr. Brinton and his daughter Celia. And then I suppose we moved to Cotton Hall, which is no longer. That was next to a pub. And then eventually into Eaton Square. From Eaton Square we went to
Broken Furlong,
that's right, which was on the other side of the railway on the Eatonwick Road. And from Eaton Square, of course, I suppose, married.
So you spent your childhood in Eaton itself, then?
Yes, I spent all my childhood in Eaton, yes. I went to Eaton Pawnee School. I have my name in gold letters in Eaton Pawnee School, as a matter of fact. I won the Pawnee Scholarship, which I got paid for, by the way. That was Mr. Pawnee. He was a French master at Eton College, and he actually had the school built. And there was a headmaster's place in front and a headmistress's place, two cottages which joined on the road. And they had one each side, and a gate by outside which went into their sections of the school. And there was also an infant school. Of course, I was there till I was 14. And then I worked for Eaton School Stores, Howard Roberts, can't think of the other one. Another place in Eaton, anyway. Eventually, I then went to, what was the grocer's name?
Sainsbury's.
And I lived in Lewisham. I was in Lewisham at a store there, near the clock tower. There were two of them. But we, in those days, we used to go to school at Blackfriars before we ever went into a shop. You had to go and learn how to cut butter up, how to cut this up and do that, all the odds and ends. I eventually left there and came back to Windsor. I suppose, a few years I was there. I was only about 15 then, and I suppose I was 16 or 17. I came back to Windsor, I finished with, and worked for David Greggs. Enough. From there, I eventually went to Tommy Walton's. Do you know Tommy Walton's? He had a shop in every underground station in London.
Selling?
Fruit. He only sold fruit. The only potatoes we ever sold were in bags. But it was a fruit shop, and it was in Pescott Street, opposite Wars. But his son and daughter, he unfortunately died. As a matter of fact, at the time, he had trouble with his delivery vans, so they wanted to go on strike. So he sold the business to somebody else and then hired it, and that beat the strike. So they didn't know what to do. And from there I was called up, actually. My brother in the Air Force, he used to come home. I was still working. I was called up. All the others went in. But
before we come on to that, just to go back a bit, had you enjoyed school?
Yes, I did. I thought school was great. Oh yeah, it was really great, yeah. Because, well, being the companions I had there, I mean, and the headmaster, Mr. Frampton, I mean, in the winter, this is the sort of thing you did. The playground, there were two playgrounds. The girls was one side of the fence and us the other. But he used, in the winter, a cold day, he would go and throw, well, with buckets of water down in the playground. So they went in, a bit, thing like that. And we used to have a slide, which when you hit the fence and then went off in. That's the sort of man he was, Mr. Frampton. He was great. We also had another one called Colin Hall, and he class four, I think he took. But he used to do all these silly things. He would make sweets, a lesson of making sweets, and doing all sorts of daft things like that. He was always doing something to interest you, really, I suppose. But school was great. And the girls' school was up above, and my sister was there. And I'll tell you, one day, I was going to school, this is Jenna, walking along with two of us, and one of the girls came behind us, and she put both of us on her shoulders and pushed me into the road. Fortunately, traffic was very scarce then. And I hit her. You didn't stop to think, you just clouted her. So I was sent to go up to the girls' school. I knew what it was for as soon as I was told. And the headmistress up there, she kept on to me, "No, apologise." And I would not apologise. I said, "No, I had nothing to apologise for. I absolutely refuse." So she made me go and stand in a corner with my face in the corner. And of course, my own sister was there, sitting there. She said, and she told me afterwards, she said, all the girls were absolutely laughing. They were, she said, they couldn't stop themselves. She said, "See you standing there." And I made quite a name for myself, I suppose, with all the females.
The boys and the girls were taught separately in the school?
Oh, yes, they were completely. The boys' school was downstairs, the girls' schools were upstairs. And we had, what, four or five classrooms downstairs. They had several upstairs. And there was also an infant school there as well. You went from infancy right through at the same place. And there, I suppose,
What did you win the scholarship for?
Pawnee Scholarship was a Pawnee Scholarship. It was all the senior boys in the scholars were there. And Mr. Pawnee was a French master, as I say, at Eton College, and he installed that because he built the school, funnily enough. It was him that had, why is it? But he used to give the scholarship, and I mean, only a senior boy, the older boys went to it, but he would.
If you'd won it, Dad, what would it have? What
was
it paid for?
He paid it, and the one who won the scholarship got £6 a year for 2 years, and the one who got second got it for 1 year. And then if you could then go to Slough, to the senior school above, but unfortunately my parents couldn't... didn't want me to go, and they, well, in a sense, it would cost too much money to be transferred backwards and forwards to Slough, and uniforms, of course, you had to have smart uniforms there. We just went in whatever we had to have ordinarily.
So you left school at 14?
I left school at 14, yes.
Had you had any particular career in mind as you were going through school?
No, not particular, not at all, really. I worked, as I say, I worked for Eton School Stores, Howard Roberts, another little shop along there, and eventually went with that. But when I went into the army, naturally, that was it, because I was 6 years, and I never went back. I went back to be a bus driver. I drove for London Transport and Green Line buses until I was a senior man at Windsor Garage.
What about anything in the way of hobbies as a school child?
Hobbies? What did I do? Played football. I played football everywhere. I played, even in the army, I played football. and occasionally cricket. I wasn't keen on cricket, but football. What put me off cricket, I'll tell you. We were playing, so I don't know where it was, and the wicketkeeper had a nasty knock, and I got stuck in his place, and that finished me. I thought, cricket, no, I don't want that bloody ball coming there.
Eaton was a
complete town. Well, it was a town, funnily enough, not a village. That's the strange part about it. They've got an Eaton Town Council now. But, I mean, really, the college and Eaton were all one. Of course, the majority of people who could worked in the college. And you used to have I was in the Scouts, which was in the college, and then it was the Church Lads Brigade. My brother was the bass drummer in the Church Lads Brigade. My younger brother was the side drummer. We used to go to hospital parades, everything, march everywhere.
What about the camps in Devon?
Oh, we went camps at Exmouth. But we weren't in the town. We were way up on the hills at the other far end. And we used to, what we always did, we were lucky, was the college used to have their camp, the boys. And then when they'd finished it, we took it over for a fortnight. So it was really marvellous, really. The Eaton College, really and truly, they are still now wonderful people, and the amount they do for the locality and everything is.
There was a good relationship between the town and the.
Oh yes, always was. Yes, I mean, but we used as youngsters. We in December before they broke up, we'd go carol singing, and go round the boys' houses, and then they used to throw coins out, but you didn't pick them up. You should put, if it was wet, you put your foot on them, because they used to heat them up on the floor and throw them out. But it was all done with the college then. It was wonderful, really. But it was marvellous.
And you still go to an old people's lunch club?
I go to the strange part about it, I go lunchtime into Eaton today and tomorrow, normally, Wednesday and Thursday, where we have a lunch. And it's the pub that was quite opposite. The other side went in the old days, it's not now the same. We lived right opposite. Our garden, the two gardens sort of came together with just a path going in between them. And the back of our place, the whole row, it went round in a square. Well, as you say, it was a square. But halfway along was thing when and we at the our side we had a lovely backyard where all the toilets were, funnily enough, and that there my father used to keep chicken and rabbits, and also we could fish into the river because it was just at the beginning of the mill stream, and he used to put lines out, catch eels, but people used to, well, he gave them away always, mainly. But just things like that all went on. Really and truly, we were self-supported. Also, my father, over towards Eaton Wick, along the railway, there's loads of allotment. There's still a lot on there. And we had 40 pole, which my brother, George, and I, we used to dig most of it for him. For which, when we'd done all that, and when the camping came around, he gave us money to go to camp at Church Lads Brigade, you see, or the Scouts, which earlier days I was in the Scouts, but of course later on you get into the Church Lads Brigade, which are, all those things are finished, they're not going now.
But that lunch club you go to is still financed by Eaton College, isn't
it? Oh yes, that's still financed by Eaton College. The food actually comes up from the college kitchens. It's brought up to the, except when they're on holiday. They bring it up to this. It was an old pub. It was the
New Inn.
New Inn. Oh, and its carriages. Noakes's, I think, before that. It was an old, it's an old pub, but they've taken over the bottom of it, and it's nice little dining rooms and everything we have in there, and it's surprising the things that go on there. They have a competition every week for draws, and the money, I don't know what, there's money here, there and everywhere. Well, a little while ago we had a big, what was special that day, but we had everything. You had balloons, and put a great big box full of balloons, and you just went pick one out, and they'd poke it, and then you've got a ticket and what you've won.
And the boys come there to join you at lunchtime, don't they?
Yeah. But pity I didn't bring that sheep, because we've got for just the end of October and November and December, there's a whole pattern run out week after week of
social calendar.
Pleasures, doings and everything.
When you were in the school, was it the sort of training school for Sainsbury's in Lewisham?
I actually was at Lewisham, but I have to go every day up to Blackfriars, get a bus up to Blackfriars, which tuppence all the way, if you want to know, because we always travelled a bit later than when we weren't allowed to. And then we went to school there, and they'd got everything there. Well, what we did up there when we did it, I mean, we would stand there for ages patting up butter, and because that was all packed into boxes and sent out to different branches in the end, it would save them the work. But when you got to Sainsbury's, when you worked at Sainsbury's, your boxes of butter came in just in a box. You put them out on a block, and then you had to wire them all up. Mark them and wire them all up so that they were roughly a pound each. And cheese, I mean, you cut whole cheese, everything was cut whole cheese, sides of bacon. We had one accident one day, where a side of bacon fell down, was hanging up, and it caught one of the blokes in the hook, a great big hook, caught him on the shoulder and tore it open. That's the sort of thing you had to watch out for. But cheeses, I mean, people didn't really, they ate better in those days because the cheese was cut up in front of them if they wanted to. And cheese and bacon, I mean, there were the bacon, a one-man machine, if they wanted to, they'd get a side of bacon or back of bacon down. And they'd have so many rashers at the thickness they wanted them, and he'd cut them off there and then. And the front of the shop was always, nearly every shop was the same, I think, with this. The whole of the, across the front of the shop were eggs. And it was just all eggs across there. And you had two people standing on the front just selling eggs.
No windows.
And all along, in Lewisham, as it happened, all along the front were all stalls of fruit, of vegetables and all sorts of things, people selling stalls, because just behind them were a row of gardens, and in between that and the garden, they used to always people there selling things.
Do you know how many stores Sainsbury's owned at that stage?
Oh, I should think, I couldn't say, but there must have been hundreds, I should think, because everywhere you went there was a Sainsbury's in London, really. And, I mean, they had a massive place in Blackfriars where they sent everything out from, as I say, the school was, well, the main offices were at Blackfriars as well.
How long were you at Sainsbury's for then, at the school?
I suppose 2 or 3 years, I suppose, I stopped then. And then I used to come home weekends, you see, from Lewisham to Waterloo and then down by train, when I could afford it. And I got home one day, and David Greggs and Wynne were pleading for people. So I had to be resignation in I came and worked for David Greggs in Windsor, so I was living at home again then. And I think I had a row with somebody there at Greggs after a year or so. I don't know how long, I couldn't say how long I worked there. And this job was going up in the town at Tommy Walton's, so I took it, fortunately. And eventually I was sort of quite high up there, and I spent the rest of the years until the war came, when I was called up.
Had you been much aware of what was happening in Europe in Germany during the 1930s?
Not a lot, I suppose. Just the normal things we took notice of. I did do something because I was prepared. You could see war was coming, and I always remember that over the talk, we sort of... I refused... That's one thing. All my brothers... Well, one brother was in the Navy. He was in the Navy for 12 years before the war started. And he actually did 35 in the end, because where he'd have probably have come out after 12 years, he stayed on. And he was Chief Petty Officer. And I'll get round to it later on. I was in Egypt, and I was actually in north of Iraq. When we sailed out, we left and took the boat. There were, 8,500 of us on, 500. It was 8,000 or so, and 50 or 60 of them were nursing sisters. That's when we sailed from Gorok and across and into... back into Portside, is it? Halfway down?
Freetown.
Yeah. And...
It was Freetown?
No. Not Freetown. No. Okay. Portside is in on the Atlantic side. In the corner of the hoop. And when we were there, we had one person. He had to come back to England. He couldn't sweat. And it would have killed him if he had carried on. We all thought afterwards, at the time, we thought, oh, lucky fella. But when I think of it, I thought it was bad luck. Because he's coming back to England where they're getting bombed. Whereas we stayed in Freetown for quite a few days because the ship behind us was sunk. And as far as I know, we lost a few Bren gun carriers on that. I'm not sure. I don't know. That's all hearsay. But we then sailed down to Cape Town, and we lost the nurses there. They were taken away to... I'd probably flown up to Egypt, really, because that's where we were intended for. And instead, we sailed across to Bombay... And we were re-kitted out there. Was all our big helmet things for the thing were taken. We were given Bombay bowlers, little light bowlers to put on instead of the big old sun hats of no. But we stayed there, and then we went on the Nuralia. It was a wooden ship that was used in the Boer War, but it was still working. And we sailed in that up the Persian Gulf, up into... where's all the trouble?
Iraq.
Baghdad.
Iraq.
Iraq. We've got to Baghdad. And then we went straight up to north of it, to a place called Kirkuk, where I was on the advance party, funnily enough, for that. And... while we were there, the officer said, "Oh," he said, "I don't think we need to sit, guys. We'll get down and have a rest." He woke up in the morning, laid on his gram sheet. They came. They used to. We found out afterwards they used to send dogs in, and if the dogs came in, they came in. They didn't worry about us because, I'll admit, our guns were all chained to our bodies. we had been serious about that, but he woke up more or less naked, and he'd lost all the kit and his blankets. You don't believe it. It was absolute scream.
Some of these local people
came in. The dogs come in first, and if the dogs don't make any noise, they come in and do what they want to do. You start to be very careful in Iraq, I can assure you, in those days. And that would have been 1942. And of course we were just at the side of, to the left, no, we were there, to the right of us were the oil field of Kirkuk. And funnily enough, my doctor, when I come out of the army at home, and my personal doctor, he was my doctor, and he'd been working in the oil fields at Kirkuk.
What kind of living conditions did you have while you were in Iraq?
Well, when we got that there, we eventually had to dig 4-foot thing to put a tent up. But the tent wasn't just an ordinary one, it was a big one, because there was 12 of you slept in it, but you were 4 foot down. And all of them, now I'll tell you a little thing that happened there. Of course, we naturally got the tent over, and I thought, well, that's funny all around here. And there was no grass grew there, it was just ground. And the roads were oil and stuff mixed to make them, so they were, you couldn't drive in wet weather. And I said, go around there. This is how I got my first strike, by the way. I said, we'll dig a trench all round where the overlay came. So people were saying, what are you doing that for, digging that? I said, well, I said, it's only bare ground. I said, what if it gets wet? Well, it won't rain here, will it? So one of the other tents did do it, but some of them didn't bother. And then all of them, we got a deluge, didn't we? And they said, good God. That's how I got a stripe, by the way. Become a lighthouse corporal.
What was it then that the tents were?
Well, they were laid out, I mean, they were massive. They weren't just like ordinary tents. I mean, they were great big squares, well, bigger, much bigger than this room. I mean, you had all slept round in single. But they had to be 4 foot down. I don't know why that was, but they were all four foot dug four. And of course, you went into them. But the tent, well, I suppose it, if you imagine it, but I should say it was perhaps four times bigger than this room when it was up. But that was a set that saved it. And some of the blokes come and they said, well, you were right, weren't you? But I could see the someone made me do it. The ground was just bare ground. Well, if nothing's growing, what happens if it rains? And I mean, we did have quite a storm. And of course, it trickled in. I don't say we didn't get a little bit of in hours even, but we weren't soaked up like they were. So they had to dry it out. They had to more or less dig a fresh bit, because they would put it in the thing and cast it out.